Hi, baby. Good morning.
Hi. How are you?
I was a nervous wreck. My camera wasn't working. I was like, and Christine is coming. Oh, my God. Who does that? Not a brain.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I was just waiting in the waiting room, but I didn't realize my camera wasn't on.
No, my camera wasn't on.
Oh, okay.
It was just a black blur, but I was like, how you doing, baby?
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too. I'm so glad that you're here with me on the edge. You didn't send me a copy of your book. Did you send me a copy of your book?
I don't remember if I did or not. I'm sorry if I didn't. So
well,
if you want, we
can always cross promote your book. I'm doing a great giveaway. I'm doing my Mother's Day giveaways.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, okay. So I'm giving away like about four fabulous swag bags with information. Lord have mercy. My camera's still turned off. With wonderful perks inside.
So do you want four or five? You want about five books then?
Yeah, whatever, however you want to roll.
Okay, that sounds great.
Because I want to read it, too. I want to hear all about you, Christine. How do you pronounce your last name?
Ristino.
Ristino.
Yeah, perfect. Ristino. Okay.
Well, you're looking fabulous. How's the corona treating you, baby?
Well, actually, strangely enough, we think my son has it, unfortunately.
Come on now. Don't be claiming it. He's got all the symptoms?
Symptoms. We went for a test about 3 days ago. And they haven't, basically they haven't contacted us. They said they would in 72 hours. So I've been on the phone trying to figure out where his test results are. But yeah, he had, you know, all the symptoms. But he hasn't left the house since March 12th. So go figure. I can't figure it out.
You had any foreign agents? You had anybody come in?
Well, we had one person wearing a mask. We had a refrigerator problem, but that was like 2 weeks, I guess about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it does fit the timeline. I don't know. It's so strange.
How are you feeling?
I feel fine. And so does my husband and daughter. So we're all doing fine. It's just my son and he seems to be doing better.
Is he achy or what's the
deal? Yeah, so he got aches, chills, the shakes, you know. He had 103 point something fever.
Oh, wow.
I know, and muscle aches all over and really bad headaches. His heart rate would go up because his fever was so high. Now his fever's down a bit, but he's still sleeping. It's 133 and he hasn't woken up at all today, you know. So he's mostly sleeping. I just think he has it.
How old is he?
He's 15.
15? Had he been practicing social distancing?
Yeah, he hasn't left the house since March 12th. The kid has not left the house. So the only thing I can think of is either he ate, like maybe some people were touching, you know, the people who were unloading fruit or something in the store had it, and I kept telling my kids to wash it, but he wasn't.
Well, you know, and I wash everything with a little vinegar and water. I have a little vinegar and water right by the sink, and I wash it and let it sit and let it resonate for a minute before I eat it, because I knew it was going to touch the food source. I mean, how are people going to have the, as my mother say, the itchy beebies and the coochie wallies? Get into the food source. I mean, they're touching our food. It was just a matter of days before it got into the bacon.
Oh, I know. And the thing is, too, with things that people unload, and where even though it can stay on plastic for like 48 hours or something like that, and you know, I think it's probably from the grocery shopping. And my son, I did the same thing with the vinegar, and he's not so, you know, he doesn't care. I mean, he cares, but he doesn't.
He gonna learn today to care.
Exactly. He didn't seem to be taking the precautions.
So, well, I'm going to be sick, though, to have to learn the lesson. I don't want
I know, that. I know. But he's doing better. His fever's down. So I'm like, I feel like, you know, he's out of the woods, knock on wood anyways. But
you know what my grandmother used to do?
What she used
to cut an onion and put it in your socks.
Really?
Draws a fever.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'll try it. Why not, right?
Just slice an onion and put them in those tube socks. You know, boys' socks. The onion might run.
They're disgusting anyways. Maybe the onion will help.
That's crazy. Well, welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never done. I've got Christine Rajano right there, brains, okay? I'd love to get a little raw footage. We talk a little bit about, is it okay to talk about your son not feeling well?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Well, I just want to make sure I don't want to put nobody on blast. So how you doing for the most part? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm teaching and reading and writing a bit and spending a lot of time with my kids and my husband, which has been good.
It is good. This is the perfect pause. So tell my brains a little bit about you. I know that you teach Italian. And
yes.
We're talking about that because, you know, I was supposed to have this show on the road. I was supposed to be in Italy right now. Remember?
I do remember. And I'm sorry you're not there, April.
I'm sorry, but then I'm not sorry.
No, that's true.
Because I would have been on that cruise ship and I'm telling, a mature black woman, don't worry about it. Let's just toss her overboard.
That's.
I know.
We know that our society is insane and unfair and all kinds of things. So I know you're joking, but I also know that there's some truth in what you're saying as far as.
Yes. And it just gets stranger and stranger every single day. So tell my friends a little bit about you, wonderful.
Sure, wonderful. It's so good. First of all, I'm so happy to be on your show, April. And it's an honor to finally meet you in person because you're so lovely.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm Christine Restaino, and I teach Italian at Emory University, and I mostly teach Italian courses, but I also teach a course. One course that I teach is on memoir writing, and it's basically, we talk about Italian memoir, but then my students write their own pieces. So that's really cool. And we end up talking.
Explain to my brains, you know, because I like to color in all the white spaces. Mm-hmm. Explain to my brains, what is memoir writing?
So memoir is when you write about your own life, but it's different than biography or autobiography. Because you're writing about a particular part of your life, part of your life that is an important part of your life where you might learn something or where there's a story to tell that's poignant. And so we're in that class, we're writing a lot of pieces about poignant moments of our lives. And I love teaching that class. I'm teaching it again next semester. But I've also taught classes on education. And also, I do a comparative course with Italy and China where myself and a colleague of mine talk about food through the medium of noodles. And actually, we're talking about culture through the medium of noodles. So we're looking at Chinese noodles and American noodles, but what we're really looking at is different cultures. And usually, I have a lot of international students in the class. And so we end up talking about more than China and more than Italy and food practices and things. And I just really think that food is such a great connector. You know, we've got a multicultural world, and this day and age when there's so much divisiveness going on, it's wonderful to be able to see what we have in common. And so food is a really good way to do that.
It's a great equalizer.
Yes.
And music.
And music, I agree. Music, too, is stunning, and it does connect.
So you have a very compassionate story that you wrote about as a memoir. Tell my brains about that.
Sure, certainly. So I'll tell you about the catalyst for this book. I was with my 3 and 5-year-old children, and I was attacked in a parking lot and beaten up in front of them. And this sent me on a journey, really. It changed the whole trajectory of my life. And I began, initially, people kept asking me about the race of the attacker, and I was getting super angry about it, and I would shut down conversations left and right. I couldn't understand why they were asking that question. They weren't even asking how we were doing. They were more focused on that. And so I realized I'm from a very small town in Massachusetts, and it's predominantly Italian-American, and I had never really understood race. And as I'm very liberal, and I was afraid to talk about difficult things because I was afraid of hurting somebody's feelings or miscommunicating or offending. So I stayed away from difficult topics for most of my life. But after this happened, I said, you know what? I don't understand enough about race, and I'm living in Atlanta, Georgia, and I might as well learn something. And so I started opening up and having conversations that went deep into discussions on race. And initially I thought my book was about race, discussions on race from the perspective of a white woman who was trying to understand more. And then as time went on, I realized that it was about race, but it was about other things too.
Let's dial back. What was the race of your attacker?
He was African American, but he just happened.
Wait, but he changed? What happened? He was, but he was a black man.
He just happened to be African American. And I think that's, you know, for me, this was just one man. And so my struggle was, why does this have to, you know, why are people asking me this when this was just one man? What does it say? It doesn't say anything about who's going to attack you in a parking lot. But at the same time, my son started to become afraid of black men. He was only 3 years old, and he'd start hiding behind my legs every time he saw a black man. So I had some obstacles to overcome because I didn't want this experience to affect him negatively when it comes to race, you know, when it came to other people.
Well, and that was, you know, somebody attacking your mother, number one. Mm-hmm. And then from a totally different perspective that you don't interact with on a regular basis, you know, it's like an alien. I can totally understand the trauma.
Well, he did interact with African-American kids at his preschool and parents, but I think, and in fact, his best friend was African-American and still is to this day. He just, I don't know, I guess it opened his eyes to a number of things. One was the power of violence, because the day after this happened, when he went back, or 2 days after, when he went back to school, he started hitting kids in the playground, and he had never done that before. So, you know, this was for him, he saw how much power this man had over me. But then he'd see, I think for him, seeing the parents of his friends suddenly started to make him nervous. So we had a lot of discussions about that. And, you know, one of the discussions involved this child who was afraid of my son's walrus shirt. Like, my son had this cool walrus shirt. It had a walrus on it. And
one of those, like, three-dimensional ones?
No, it just had a picture of a big walrus on it. It wasn't anything special, but Benny loved it. So it was special to him. And so basically, every time Benny wore this to school, the friend would take off running. He was afraid he'd start crying. And I said, you know, how does it feel when your friend starts crying and runs away from you just because you're wearing a walrus shirt? You know, does that, you know, how do you feel? And he goes, it doesn't make me feel very good because I love my friend, you know, and I don't want him to be afraid of me. And I said, well, you know, this was just one man, you know, and I talked about the attack, and it was just one man. And it didn't mean that every man who looked a little bit like him would do the same thing, you know. And at three, he got it. My daughter was five, and with all three of us talked a lot about racial profiling, white privilege, and a whole bunch of things that I was surprised that they understood, that they did on some level. both of my children understood these concepts. And I was able to get through to my son, who pretty soon after changed his behavior.
How did your daughter resonate with this?
Well, I mean, it made a lot of sense to her. She reacted very differently. She cried every night and started drawing pictures of me in an ambulance and, you know, pictures of mostly pictures of ambulances and or me lying on the ground bleeding. So she digested it a little differently.
So was this a robbery? Did you try to steal your purse?
It was a robbery, but I didn't understand because I had never been attacked before. So I had my purse, and it's funny, I never carry a purse, but a friend had given me a purse for my 40th birthday, and I was carrying it, and the person was trying to get the purse off of my shoulder, and I kept pulling in like this. I didn't understand what was happening. He stood up and walked towards us when we got stuck on the sidewalk in the cart, like the kids were in a kiddie cart at a store. And when he came over, I thought he was going to help us, and I thanked him, and instead he socked me in the face and then was trying to get the purse. But I wasn't understanding what was going on until I was lying on the ground.
Christine, have you understood now that you need to have a self-defense course?
I did. In fact, first of all, I'm super trusting. So, and even now I am. But I did take Aikido with my daughter, and my son took karate after that for a number of years.
See, my thing is, I always err on the side of not trusting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were doing a business transaction one time, me and my husband. And the guy was really trying to close the deal. And I'm sitting there and I'm processing it. And he goes, "Well, you don't trust me?" And I was like, "Absolutely not." I'm from South Central. So, you know, LA, we don't trust you. You have to earn trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, this has really, really done a lot for you in so many different ways. And I'm so glad that it has not hardened your heart and made you bitter. But what you have really done is you've just really kind of taking it full throttle, and you're doing some great things in the community. Tell us a little bit about that as a result of your...
One thing that this event actually led to was investigating two other experiences I had with violence. When I was young, around 8 or 9, I was molested by my grandfather, and I was raped at 21. And I had never looked at either of these experiences. I just ignored them. I said they barely affected me, and I went on. But I think these two experiences needed to come out. And ultimately, I started writing the book, and I didn't even know why I was writing it. I just kept writing and writing. And ultimately, these two experiences surfaced, and I had to tell my family. And it really changed my whole place in the world because I was super passive, and I just wanted people to get along, and I mediated all the time, and I didn't care about my voice, and I didn't listen to what my stomach was telling me. And by getting my truth out there with my family, my whole place shifted. I started to feel the truth deep inside, and I started to feel it in my stomach, my heart, my head, and actually listen to my own voice, which I had never heard before. And this led to some really important things for me. I basically started doing a lot of social justice work around race, around ethnicity, around documentation, and around rape. So I work with a lot of students. Since I work at Emory University, I work with students around the topic of race. So I advise a group of students who write the Survivor Anthology. And it's an anonymous group of writings that comes out every year within our community. And so I work with those students. I work with Undocumented Students of America, a group of students at Emory. And I help them with a lot of issues around voice and around telling our story, you know, like telling their stories. And
there's a lot of stories to tell, again. And, yeah, you know, the trauma, the post-traumatic stress disorder, being able to have talk therapy. Did you have to go through a lot of therapy to kind of get through this?
I did. And I had gone to therapy before, but I hadn't really addressed this until after I was attacked in the parking lot, but I've done a lot of therapy since. And I went and I found one of the top therapists in trauma, and I've been working with her, and she's fabulous. And there was one point where I had told her all about my book, and she said, you know, you have really investigated this, you've looked at it, you've told your family, you've analyzed it, but you've never felt it. Mm-hmm. And I realized she was absolutely right. And that was kind of the final hurdle, was feeling it, allowing myself to feel the pain.
Right.
All three of these events where I had wound myself up so tight and I was doing so much so that I could avoid thinking about it or feeling it. But when she said that, I realized she was right. I had had some self-esteem issues, and I was feeling a lot better about myself, but I said, there's still something, you know, I had told her at the beginning of that session, there's still something that I need to gain around self-esteem. And I think she really pinpointed it. She's like, you've got to let yourself feel this, you know, and if you feel it.
Feel the feel, but let me ask you a question.
Sure.
When that feeling finally bubbled up, mm-hmm. from your stomach into your chest, into your throat, and came out of your mouth, where were you at that place? I mean, did you break down and cry? Did you fall into deep depression? Was it a release? Mm-hmm. What did you feel?
I had written my book and I was feeling pretty good. So I had gone through depression. After I was attacked, I was super depressed. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I was feeling more and more empowered. But one night I was having a glass of wine with my husband and we were sitting outside and talking. And I started to talk to him about my grandfather, who was this man that had done a lot of positive things in the world, you know, and it had been very hard for me to understand how someone who could bring so much joy to others had done this to me. And I started talking about him and telling my husband all the funny things he had done. And before you knew it, I was just crying and tears were just pouring down my face. And I think it was the first time I let myself feel the pain of that, like that there was a man who had done a lot of good in the world, but had done this lousy thing to me. And our society doesn't really allow survivors to bring those two things together. Like either the person's a saint or a monster, and there's no space in between to say this person has done good things and I love this person, but he's also molested me. And so I think that's one of the reasons I couldn't tell family, because I couldn't kind of bring the two together. We love right. this person. Everybody loves him. He's funny. Right. So that was
and the predators, same. You know, sexual predators. I tell people from I've never had that experience, but from what I hear is they groom you and they're not trying to hurt you. They're trying to, you know, be romantic to you and help you find pleasure. And then as you grow, that's where the shame comes in, because when you experience that pleasure with someone else, this is not what this is supposed to be. This is bad. This was not done to me. So let me ask you another question. You can answer if you like. If you don't feel comfortable, I understand. But how did this impact, you know, your relationship with your husband after you told him all of that? You know, it's very, very emotional. And again, for you to fall in love and to trust, because a lot of women don't want to be touched. You know, they don't trust. They're afraid. You know, you have a young daughter. Tell me some of those conversations.
Absolutely. So we've been having conversations since 2007 when the attack happened about these things. So my husband, by the time I was teary with the wine, he was used to, you know, he knew everything backwards and forwards. He had read my book a couple times and proofread it for me. And so I think in a way, he probably was sick of the topic because it had just consumed our lives for so long. But he was also good. He's a good listener. And he, this was a different side to it, that he really understood how important it was for me to cry over this. And he was very empathetic and very, very kind. And, you know, we had a really good talk and I felt we connected so well. But I don't know. It's interesting when you talk about trust. I've always trusted people, strangely enough, but what I don't trust and what I've had trouble with are just weird, strange events. Like my dad didn't have a fire alarm in his house, and I got all paranoid. And he had a fire alarm, but no batteries. I went and made him buy batteries.
Right.
And he's like, "What are you so worried about?" And then he didn't. He cooks the meat, the chicken, and I always feel like he's undercooked it. And I'm like, "You need to put my piece on for longer." So, my mom will spray cleaning fluid, and I step 3 steps back because I don't want to get cancer. So.
Wow. Right. Yeah. I do that too. I do not stand in front of the microwave.
Same. Exactly. I don't want to get cooked. You know, and I think for me anyways, my dad said, what are the chances that there'll be a fire in this house? Well, what are the chances that you're going to be raped, molested, and attacked in a parking lot? You know, for me, they're 100%, all three. So what are the chances of any of these other things
happening? Right. I get you.
So in a way, I just didn't trust circumstance or fate, I guess. But people, I've always trusted. I love people, and I like love personal and human connection. So I connected well with my husband throughout, even when I met him. We were very close. But one thing that did change was how my husband and I talked to each other, because we had this, I guess you would call it a flirtation, where instead of yelling and screaming at each other about something we were mad at about, we'd just dig each other a little, you know, like we'd joke with each other. But after I was attacked, I realized that can be actually damaging if you keep hearing negative stuff about yourself, even if it's in a joking manner.
Right.
And so I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And I think I changed really fast after the attack, and I think it was hard for my husband because our relationship changed.
What was kind of coy and cute and funny is now very serious.
Yeah.
Impactful. Mm-hmm. Your daughter. How old is your daughter now?
She is 17, almost 18.
Wow. So she's really at that age now where she's going to start interacting more with young men.
Yeah.
Out, you know, high school, college. How does she feel now?
So she's suffered a lot, and both of my kids have. They've both suffered from anxiety and depression. I don't know, you know, one of their first memories is this event, so I don't know how much trauma this has caused them in their lives, but I do know that we've been dealing with fallout of depression and anxiety their whole lives. Shortly after this happened. And my kids have a regular counselor they've been going to for years. And she suffers a bit from esteem struggles too. The difference though is when I was growing up, I never felt like my voice was important, and I never voiced my opinions. But both of my kids, they're social justice warriors. They stand up for themselves. They stand up for other people. They recognize when something isn't right, and they are out there trying to change the world. And I was just so afraid to say my opinion. They're not. And I think it's because I started modeling something different after we were attacked, and standing up for myself all the time, but also standing up for them, standing up for anybody whose voices weren't heard. And so I see that because I changed the way I interacted with the world, I see an impact on my kids. You know, I see a lot of what I say I can hear in their voices and see it in their actions. So sometimes you carry trauma with you and it affects your kids directly. And I have a feeling that was the road that we were on. You know, we were on that road until I was attacked. And then because I decided to ask the tough questions, because I decided to stand up for my own voice and the voices of others, we've modeled something different for my children. They are interacting with the world in a very different way, and I'm proud of that.
Again, it's an incubation period. I think that she's going to blossom from this because, again, she sees both sides. You know, teenage years is tough. It's tough for so many reasons. But you know, I hope that she's careful now that she's got some martial arts. She can kick a butt. But, finding love, trust, having that conversation, you've provided all of those things. Mm-hmm. So now let me ask you some random questions so people get to know you a little bit better. What are 3 things that you just simply cannot live without?
That's a great question. So I guess, well, my kids and husband, so my parents and brothers, so my family. Family's one. And then another one is writing. I just love to write. And another one is teaching. I think those are three things that I just wouldn't want to not have in my life.
What's your favorite color?
Purple.
Why?
It's, well, you know, it's interesting, April. I see a little purple where you are, and it just feels so comforting and lovely. Warm.
It is? Because it's got a mixture of blue.
Yeah. Pink. It's complex.
It is. It is.
It's complex, and I like complexity.
What's your favorite animal?
I like dogs. We have two dogs. I love dogs. I wasn't a big animal person until my children convinced us to get a dog. And then we got a dog, and I just fell in love with this dog.
I know. The coyotes ate my dog.
Oh, April.
They jumped over the fence and kidnapped him out of my backyard. Whoa. He was only 5 pounds, bless his heart.
Oh, my God.
I've been trying to get another one. Mr. Magnificent is going, no, you know. We've had 13 dogs in our 35-year marriage. Yeah. He goes, can I have a break from the leash?
I am so sorry about the...
I know, but I've had some animal communicators on my show, and they say that the transition was quick and that he's up there being loved up by my brother and him, so he's fine.
Oh, good.
I'll count it all joy. What is your favorite meal, since you love Italian cuisine? What's one of your favorite meals?
Well, right now I'm really loving spaghetti bolognese, or pasta bolognese, pasta with bolognese sauce. And I lived in Bologna.
What kind of sauce is that? Is that a white sauce, red, green?
What? It's red sauce, and it's with some sauce. It has sausage in it. Interestingly enough, there's a little bit of milk in the sauce, onions, carrots, celery. It's really good.
Well, you're going to have to send me that recipe.
Okay, I promise I will, April. I love Italian food, obviously. I grew up making Italian food and eating Italian food, mostly Italian-American fare, because that's the community I grew up in.
Have you visited Italy a lot as a child?
Not as a child. The first time I went to Italy, I think I was 24. And then I went every year for a while because I was a grad student in Italian, and I lived there for a couple of years.
Wow.
And I mean, Italy's quite a special place, and the food's amazing, and the people are so warm. But right now, it's in the same boat that we're, you know, everybody's locked up and struggling.
I can't believe how hard COVID-19 hit Italy. They're like wildfire. It was crazy. Crazy. If you had a superpower, Christine, what would it be?
I guess it would be understanding what people need in any given moment. Like, you know, seeing a person and knowing exactly what to do to make them feel better, or exactly what to do to show compassion, to bear witness to their story, like exactly the right questions to ask.
Right, right. Well, that is wonderful. So tell my brains how to get in contact with you, how to purchase a copy of your book. Do you have your book there with you?
Yes, I do.
All right.
I do with it. Actually, it's on my bed. Do you mind if I stand up and grab it?
Okay.
I'll be right back.
All right.
I thought I had put it on.
This is what I'm talking about, is talking through your problems. We all have challenges. We all have unfortunate things that are going to happen to us, but it's how we receive it and it's how we process it. Now, everybody's not going to be as brave as Christine is, and to be able to transform this into something positive, but at least she's aware of it and she no longer suppresses it. It's no longer haunting her. It's no longer hurting her. She has to deal with it, and she's able to pour into others and help them express themselves. It's not going to erase what happened. It's not going to right the wrong, but it is going to allow you to edit and filter and make the proper adjustments that you can get through life and to see it with a clearer lens. Okay? Let's see that book, girl.
That's gorgeous, April. I agree. And
I'm like, yep, turn it around just a little bit. The other way. Yep, and just so our eyes can focus on that. Oh, that's beautiful. I also put this on my page, Brains, and she is going to be gracious enough to send us some copies for our reading pleasure. We are going to have a great swag bag that's coming out, and that book right there. Put it up one more time, Christine. Right there, Brains. It is going to be there. It's going to be yours. So I want you to enter to win. Tell my Brains how to get in contact with you. And I'm sure we can purchase this on Amazon, correct? Yes. All the Silent Spaces.
Wow. All the Silent Spaces. Do you want me to keep holding it up? Or
put it down. You can get it because we got it. We're going to get it. Right, Brains? We're going to get it.
Awesome. So April, my website is ChristineRistaino.com, ChristainAI. Oh, excuse me, I'm giving you my.
She mixed the first and last name, right?
So it's ChristineRistaino.com, ChristineRistaino.com. And my email address is cristai@emory.edu. And I welcome emails.
We're going to go ahead and put that down at the bottom because I want you to reach out to her. You know, you might want to do an online course. She might have something that she's offering to our Brains to talk about memoir and memoir writing. Mm-hmm. To talk a little bit about how you can begin the process of healing. Because it's a process and it's ongoing. It's not that it's not going to surface. It's not that you're not going to cry again. It's not that, you know, you may cross the street when you see anybody, man, woman, child, green, blue, purple, black, white, coming your way, especially with this corona. Everybody is extra paranoid. They're looking at everybody with a side eye. They're not worried about you snatching your purse. They're worried about you breathing on them. You know,
that's true.
You know, so we're just in a different time and a different space, but we're going to have to learn to adjust because we have to live on this planet and we want to make this life as pleasant as possible. We want to have as much joy as possible. We want to love on as many people as possible, right? And I'm loving on you right now, my sister.
And on you, April. You're amazing. I so value what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. Come back to the edge. Let us know what's going on. I am going to have actually a writer's forum, and I'd love to have you on the panel for a podcast potluck.
I would be honored.
I think it would be a lot of fun to give people some direction because I'm doing something different now. I am writing a play.
Oh, that's amazing. Complimenting.
Yeah. And wait till you guys see it. It's called The Devil's in the Details. So to look forward to that. And thank you so much for being here on the edge and being a shero. You are my shero. You know, you're a woman that loves purple, that loves her family, that loves right, that is tender, that has a dog, and to change the world with positive effects and love and redemption. And I thank you and I honor you.
I honor you too, April. And April, just a couple more things. I want to let you know I do book groups too. So if anybody wants to.
Okay. You said book reviews or book groups?
I'm happy to show up at a book group and if you're having an online group, reading my book, I'm happy to show up and join the conversation.
You know what we should do? Maybe we should start a book club.
We should. That would be amazing.
That would be really good. Yeah. And the first book we read is yours. Okay. Why not?
I would be honored, April.
Well, circle back around. We're going to get that going because folks, you know, we got another at least 2 weeks, 3 weeks, maybe a year of this quarantine kind of stuff. And we need to really pour positive things into our minds, maybe some great fiction, maybe some great comedy. There's a lot of good things that we could talk about. So we'll talk about that online and we'll circle back and bring you in, Brains. That would be great. Oprah don't have nothing on the edge.
Thank you, April.
All right. So I will talk to you again soon. Brains, I ask that you go back and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Go and Go back and subscribe to the YouTube channel, to Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook for all the updates, for great information and super great people. Thank you again, Christine.
Oh, thank you again, April. It's such a joy.
You too. Bye-bye, baby. Be safe.
Big hugs.
I know.